The Ray Foley Podcast.
Oh, here we go. Here come the details.
A Today FM original podcast.
Ray.
Yeah.
I love the show.
Hey!
Are we live? Are we live?
We're live.
We're recording.
Guys, you've just gone live. You're live now.
Guys, thanks for joining the show. Thanks for joining the broadcast. If you want to get involved and join the broadcast, it's jp@todayfm.com. Thanks for getting involved. Guys, you're live.
Not technically a broadcast, is it?
It's broad enough. It depends on how many people download it, really.
Yes, that's true.
It's a podcast. That's fairly broad. I mean, we like to keep the appeal as broad as possible. We want as many people to click in, subscribe, smash the subscribe button, or you can listen to the show live on Today FM between the hours of 2 and 4:30 p.m. on a weekday. And you can catch us on the listen back as well on the Today FM app or indeed todayfm.com and download the Go Load app. Did I cover everything there?
I think you did, Jeff.
But you know what? That's all part of the Ray Foley radio package, or indeed the podcasting package. And you're welcome for that. I got public transport on the way in. I've got my cards, actually, if you like.
Okay.
And I've got public transport.
Let's go public transport. You know, it's relatable, Ray. You're relatable to the common man and woman.
Say what you like about Ray Foley, but he's a man of the people. He's down and dirty with the common man, with the normies. He really connects and identifies with the common man. I got the Lewis Hop in Dublin. It's the tram. It's a form of public transport. I mix up my public transport quite a bit. One day I can get a bus, another day I can get a Dart, a train, or another I can get the Lewis. I could cycle in as well, cycle the whole way.
Is that a scheduling thing or do you just take an a la carte approach?
I think it's ADHD actually as well. I think it's flaky. I get doing whatever the one I'm doing for a while and then I mix it up again. And I think weather has something to do with it as well. And then I get quite stressed on the bike cycling. It's the quickest way. I can get in and out in half an hour. But by the time I reach my destination, I'm truly, really stressed just by like having to be vigilant and worrying about dying.
Yes.
At any moment because of other drivers or because of drivers and the potential for their killing me. So I sort of reach a point eventually where it's like, I'm going to take a break from that. I'll do something else. So anyway, at the moment, it's Lewis. That involves actually cycling to the Lewis and then getting the Lewis. And the Lewis is near Leopardstown, which is the race course in South Dublin. And today, it seems, they've got a student race day on.
That's cool.
Have you ever been to a student race day?
Are these students racing against each other or are they students on horses racing against each other?
That would be amazing. If they took first year communications students, marketing students, and put them on a horse racing track in the what's the lockup thing? The grid thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, gone. And they've got people up on them as well. Short, actual jockeys, short little men. In their ribbons. What are they?
That is what it's called, isn't it? It's
ribbons.
Silks.
Silk ribbons. That would be amazing. But no, it's actually just a day for students to go to. Have you ever experienced this?
Oh, so it's like a school tour type of situation, is it?
It's a day. It's a day-long racing event. So it's a full day of races at Leopardstown in this case. But they have one in Cork, I know, because we were involved in Red. And they have them all over the country. But it's a student race day specifically for students. So it's like it's like Rag Week, but it's at the races. And there are certain criteria. You need to dress up for it. You need to be dressed in your racing attire. And you need to be a student, I think. And I've been to a couple of them. And they're fun initially, but then they get pretty grim.
They get quite messy, I'd say.
Very messy.
It's like being at a music festival, except you're wearing clothes you don't want to get destroyed, and you get them destroyed.
Yeah, pretty grim. Anyway, the Lewis, because obviously the Lewis I was getting in had already been used for them to come out on out as far as Leopardstown, and it was destroyed with cans and bottles and spilt drinks. Because they'd obviously they were doing their pranks on the Lewis on the way out to
the middle of the afternoon.
Oh, it could have even been morning. These little so-and-sos were doing their. But when I was getting on, they're already gone. It's on the way in now. And we start proceeding from my stop out of Dublin on the way in. And then you can see at each stop on the other platform, each platform crowded with students waiting for the Lewis to go in the other direction and head out towards Leopardstown. And I think we've made this observation before, but You're talking about, I don't know, first, second year college students. That's the students we're talking about, not secondary school. And women, Irish women, have been. They're not from here. They're not us. We have no connection whatsoever to young Irish women, because
you're saying they're a different species.
My God. Like, I was looking out and you see, this is the thing, you see, and you can only really see it when, because they are dressed up to the nines. They're in their finery. They're dressed for a day at the races. And I suppose to exert, I don't know if they do this best dressed ladies thing as well that they do at other race events, but or even a ladies day or whatever. But like the fashion, the style, the poise, the grace, the way that, I mean, there were young women there. On various stops the whole way in to work, and I was openly laughing as I was looking out the window. There were young women, like they'd had their hair perfect, heels,
lovely,
amazing dresses, and I'm not talking like Deb's dresses. I mean like just amazing style. They had gone the whole nine yards. That fake tan was on point. It was just, and I'm looking at. There was even a few. Drinking Prosecco out of plastic Prosecco or champagne flutes.
Oh, classy, yeah.
These women came prepared. The young men, on the other hand, and you're talking about a similar age, 21, 22, 23, maybe a little younger. They just thought, how did we even stand a chance? What clue? We didn't have a clue.
No.
These young men are children, right? I've got a 12-year-old, and you could have put him in a court appearance suit or a funeral suit or his grad or his deb suit, and said to him, "Here, go up and stand on that platform," and he wouldn't have looked any different from any of the 20-year-old, 21-year-old young fellas next to these models, these stunningly elegant, beautiful creatures from, frankly, another planet.
Look, the effort for men constitutes of, have I showered or have I showered recently so I don't smell?
In the last 3 days.
Check.
Yeah.
And am I wearing clothes? Check.
And then the next level then, I suppose, is like, is it runners or is it shoes?
Or is it slightly fancy runners so that I don't even have to worry about shoes?
Yeah. And if I'm wearing bottoms, are they shorts or are they full length? And if they're full length, then it's fancy. Then
consider the amount of time as men we have managed to save, or had the privilege to save, over whatever it is.
Decades, yeah.
The 25 years we might have cared about what we were wearing, maybe.
Yeah.
The amount of time we've saved, it's kind of incredible.
The amount of time we've saved and yet managed to entirely waste. What have we accomplished with the extra time that women or young or women in general spend on looking incredible? That's the other thing as well. Young women, full stop, are plugged into, I don't know, style, fashion, awareness, even cultural awareness. Women are much more plugged in on a you know, social media level or an online level with influencers and world, you know, the way the world works. That young fella is just like... You can imagine being a 20-year-old young fella, and it's like his mother had to get him out of bed this morning and say, "I ironed your shirt for you. Put on that jacket and those trousers." And it shows. You're still wearing the GA socks with the shoes, the gun shoes, you fool. The best he can do is, "Will you shift me, mate?" That's the best luck. The only time he's ever spoken to a woman was his auntie at his communion.
Women of Ireland, we don't envy you.
You are on another level, women of Ireland. We applaud you. And my God, like these women supping out of their plastic champagne flutes, and you look down the platform and they're sucking on a shared white claw.
Are you saying we're dopes?
These young fellas. I have to say, and it's not like we're any better now in middle age. It's not like we've improved. You still look at the women in your lives. They're absolute. Do you know, They should be living in Los Angeles or Santa Monica, where things are amazing. You're talking, you know, it's another, it's crazy. And you know what? It's upsetting. Why can't we? There's a business idea in that. A guy makeover service where we just take young men and train them up into being, I don't know, even 25% as fabulous as these young women.
Well, I know it's slightly different, but isn't there like a whole industry in that in terms of online gurus, this kind of thing?
That's what I'm going to start preying on these young men.
Okay.
That's what I'm going
to
do.
And then trying to teach them how to be men, whatever their idea of what
a man
is.
No, I can't teach men.
Oh, okay.
But look at me, my God, I'm not in a position to teach men.
Right.
But I think if I spend a good year learning, you know this business of like, all you need are like, 20 good fashion pieces. You know this business. Mm-hmm. You know that kind of thing. I think we could come up with a course. But the only problem is no young fella in Ireland will go to it because they're spending all their money on White Claw and vapes. And
also, you're the head of this group.
A Metal Gear Solid. what are they playing these days? Fortnite. I don't know. Let me play. I wanted to talk about. Yeah, I don't have the time for the cards, and I don't have time for social. I wanted to get into a whole thing about social media. An article, this was in the Irish Times, about social media, right? Before I play you that, I wanted to play something else. This is a thing I heard two nights ago that it blew my mind. Okay, Julia Roberts. What do you know about Julia Roberts?
Pretty woman, actress.
Yeah. When you're talking about fabulous, incredible women, as we just were, Julia Roberts, a fabulous, incredible woman, and probably the epitome of fabulous, incredible woman.
Poise, yes.
Oh, yeah, but like on an international scale, do you know, like she was, and you're talking about like in the 80s when, you know, even Hollywood was still finding its feet in terms of fabulous and glamorous. But she was like, of course, Pretty Woman, among many other things. You know, her niece, Roberts, Emma Roberts,
okay,
the blonde-haired actor.
She's, vaguely.
She's a next-level sort of next-generation, again, Hollywood star. Was it Gossip Girl she was in, one of them? Look it up there.
Oh, for God's sake. Not important. We understand. She's an actress.
Emma Roberts. And Julia Roberts had put up this post. This blew my, like I say, it blew my mind. And it's like a punch to the chest as well when you hear it. She was having a, because they're close or whatever, and they're having a lazy Sunday, auntie and niece situation. Very normal, very kind of cool. And she's like, I don't know, what's Julia Roberts? She's in her 50s and she's having a lazy Sunday with her niece. And she takes a photograph of the two of them enjoying their Sunday and she puts it up on social media, on Instagram. Okay. Do you know the story? Have you heard it?
I don't, but I go
this
on.
This is, like, genuinely, this is true. I'll play the thing for you, and then we'll have a chat about it. This is Julia Roberts telling the story herself.
I posted a picture of my niece and I from one weekend morning. She'd slept over, and we got up, and we're having tea and playing cards and having this beautiful morning. It was great. I felt great about it. The amount of people that felt absolutely required to talk about how terrible I looked in the picture. That I'm not aging well. People saying, God, I didn't even recognize her. This is what she looks like. And then the fights that break out within the comments where someone says, you should be nice. Why should I be nice? She looks terrible. And people start fighting within the comments. I was amazed at what that made me feel. And I'm a 50-year-old woman, and I know who I am. And still,
Julia Roberts,
my feelings got hurt. I was so hurt that people couldn't see the point of it, the sweetness of it, the absolute shining joy of that photo. And I thought, God, what if I was 15?
Yeah.
That's just devastating. And it really made me see all the things about hearts and clicks and likes. And you realize there is something neurological about this whole system. It was fascinating to me, and I think it taught me a lot about being a young person in today's society.
You could have picked my jaw off the floor because I was like, Julia Roberts has, not only did she experience it as a human, Julia Roberts, like, next, like I say, interplanetary Hollywood icon. Amazing person, actor, beautiful, like the definition of beautiful and incredible. But then that, like I say, like she said, she knows who she is. She's a grown woman in her mid-50s and she's Julia Roberts. And she was still affected by it. She doesn't have it in her to go, I'm fucking Julia Roberts. I don't care what people say. And then you think, and in my case, I've got a 12-year-old and he's asking for a phone. And I'm like, what are you going to go on the phone on? He's like, WhatsApp. I'm like, you know, Instagram maybe. And then games, Minecraft or whatever. And it's like, you've no control then. As a parent, you've no control over what they're going to be exposed to. This article anyway, this is excessive use of social media is creating a generation of so-called broken people, according to a prominent consultant psychiatrist. His name is Professor Matthew Sadlier. Let me call my my professor guy.
I wonder who could that be.
His name is Matthew. Anyway, it's not my Matthew because he's only a child and he's not a psychiatrist. It's ringing.
Hello.
Hello, is that Matthew?
It is indeed.
Hello, sir. Ray Foley calling from Today FM. Professor Matthew Sadlier, thank you so much for joining us. I was reading the article about this new generation or this new species that social media and screens seems to have created and are presenting to you at the moment. Can you tell us about them?
Well, yeah. I mean, so at the IMO conference at the weekend, I brought in a couple of motions in regards to social media, protection of children specifically from social media. And, you know, there's a lot of fancy words going around like digital natives, digital whatevers. But like essentially what we're saying is that social media exposure in childhood is uniquely damaging to mental health. And what we were calling for is that there is some regulation and restriction put on social media access for children.
Yeah, and specifically for children. Now your view from this has come from what you are seeing in terms of like symptoms or new signs of how people are being affected by social media.
No, exactly. And I came to this is I work as a psychiatrist in Dublin, and essentially what we're seeing is there is definitely an increase in presentation of young people with mental health problems. And if you graph that internationally, you'll see that it kind of goes hand in hand with the introduction of social media. And there's a number of people have done very in-depth studies on a worldwide basis and have shown that actually the more somebody uses social media, the more they complain of symptoms of anxiety, symptoms of depression, and even more serious factors than that. We've known for a very long time that, you know, since the release of the internet and social media and these things, that there is a strong link between that and eating disorders.
Right.
Which is particularly worrisome. And it is definitely shown that, like, from the Global Institute of Public Health based in University College London, like, they published last year that, you know, 50 studies done in 17 countries indicates that social media usage leads to body image concerns, eating disorders, disordered eating, and poor mental health. Mainly through the mediation of social comparison.
Right.
So we know this social media, the way likes the social comparison, and we know that people in adolescence, specifically in adolescence, have much more difficulty in controlling their behaviour than adults, and that also adolescence is the period where one learns, you know, your patterns of long-term behaviour. So we know that exposing people to these entities at this age group is a much more dangerous thing. Now, having said that, I also did a study on 30-year-old doctors. So these are doctors working in full-time employment.
Right.
You know, so no, would not be considered vulnerable by any metric, you know, of society.
And fully formed and, I suppose, more mature in their outlook. Yeah.
And then we also found in that over 50% of them said that when they use social media, they experience symptoms of anxiety, depression.
Wow, that's amazing. No, we were just talking about Julia Roberts and in her 50s, and she was talking about how she was impacted by social media as well. What I want to ask you is it the old simple thing of, it's a beautiful woman, skinny, beautiful woman. I'm not a skinny, beautiful woman, so it makes me feel depressed. Or is that other thing that you read about as well, which is the chasing, you know, this chasing of the dopamine. I'm always looking for the next hit, the bright lights, the funny jokes, more, give me more. Or I suppose it's a mix of both, is it?
It's a little bit of all of that, absolutely. Like, there's definitely an element of that social comparison piece on the first, you know, that I want to be the best of what I can be. And, you know, when we grew up without social media, we did that as well. But the problem, the advantage was when we left the schoolyard at 5 o'clock in the evening, we weren't ever comparing ourselves until we got back in there the next day at 9 o'clock. The problem is now that this follows people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And if you look at things like cyberbullying, that's where the big problem is. And, you know, kids have been bullied in school, unfortunately, since, you know, probably somebody invented a school.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, you'd leave school at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock or whatever, and, you know, you're away from it. But now people are getting this bombarded at them the whole time. So definitely that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is that sort of attention economy, where it is grabbing your attention and it is disturbing people's ability to attend on things, to concentrate on longer form entities and engage with anything that goes on for a period of time. And then also you can talk about things of like sleep disturbance is a huge problem in children with social media, this, you know, using screens and how screens actually affect our sleep-wake cycles, having these bright lights shone in your eyes, you know, late at night and these things. So it's affecting people in a multiplicity of ways. And I suppose at the weekend when we discussed this at the conference, I suppose there's a certain element that, you know, adults, you know, you pay your money, you take your chances.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So with adults, you know, they should be informed and be able to say, look, this isn't good for you, but look, you're old.
You're a big boy. Yeah, you can make your own decisions. Yeah.
But with children, I do think the problem is their ability to make choices is limited. And the more we expose them to these things in younger age, the more limiting we're giving their decisions going forward.
Yeah.
You know, and ultimately addiction as an entity, and is social media addiction real? I would 100% say it is real. I do think people kind of get addicted to social media. And it's what you say, it's that, you know, dopamine hit in their limbic system, to kind of simplify it down a bit. And the problem with addiction is addiction takes away that control. It takes away your ability to make a choice.
What
you know?
Yeah, and that's it. And I suppose like with anything, you know, if I've had three big weekends in a row, I'll go, right, I'm off the booze for a couple of weeks. Similarly, people do it with cigarettes. People do it with whatever their addiction is. And similarly with the phone or even with social media, it's like I'm taking Facebook off the phone for a while because I'm just spending too much time on it. But a child can't make that decision, and I suppose maybe then a parent needs to do it. What do you make of these? There's a bunch of schools. There have been a bunch of pilots. What wasn't it in Wicklow? I've said we're not having the phones in schools anymore. And then in primary school, the proposals of not having it. I suppose that would be one step towards removing, at least from the school day.
100%. And we called for this at the meeting, and it got a unanimous response that, you know, we think there should be a national ban on primary school children having smartphones in school.
Yeah.
Now, to be absolutely clear, before everybody goes crazy, you know, what we're talking about is kids should not be allowed to bring a smartphone into the school. If their parents want them to have a smartphone at home, they can do what they want. But if you have a kid whose parents don't want them to have a smartphone, and you have a kid whose family does want them to have a smartphone, the ability of the parents who don't want their child to have a smartphone becomes significantly limited if that child is going into school and seeing all the rest.
Oh yeah, absolutely, you know? Yeah. And it's the peer pressure, and sure everyone else has one, yeah.
This does not ban, we're not banning children, you know, having a non-smart enabled mobile phone.
So say that again. You were not banning children from so you could have a text phone or whatever, or just if you want to get in touch. Yeah.
You know, the older school phones that we would have, you know, that would be the original mobile phone. So we're not saying that you can't, you know, absolutely. Everybody understands why, you know, it's important that, you know, for communication and all the rest. But it's that smart enabled phone that we don't think primary school children should be using.
Yeah, and then I suppose, even young teens would probably have a problem then as well. So the three your proposals at the IMO conference, one was the smartphone ban in primary schools, and then you had two other suggestions then as well.
We did. So the other two are based on two cases that have come up in the United States. One is that the Surgeon General in the United States issued a public health warning. Now, the Surgeon General would be the equivalent of our Chief Medical Officer. And they issued a public health warning on social media in 2023. And it said that social media needs to be treated like, you know, and basically public health warning is what we would have done with alcohol and cigarettes. So it's a concept that overuse of social media. And in that report, which is very scary, and it's online, I would advise everybody to read it. It says that the introduction of social media has caused 300,000 cases of depression among U.S. college students. And they call for measures that would reduce the use of social media. The other thing is there's a case being taken by 42 attorney general across the United States against Meta specifically in regards to accusations that Meta has done things in a knowing manner. Okay, I don't want to get too much into the weeds on that. Again, that is fully available on the internet for people to read. And as Ireland is the European headquarters of these companies, we think that if 42 states in America think this is worthy of investigation, then I think we should be investigating them as well. I don't know whether they're, you know, I don't know whether it's true or not, but it warrants an investigation.
Certainly worth looking at. And there have been, well, of course, they're a private company that wants to generate as much revenue as possible. So the expectation will be that they will do whatever it takes to drive more ads, more clicks, and more eyeballs, and whatever it is they're doing. And if that involves and more time spent on their platform, and yeah, some of the investigations or some of the reports into all the tech companies really can be pretty fascinating. So looking at what Meta are up to as well, fascinating. So. We'll give them a dumb phone. Is there any other terms and conditions or any? I've got a 12-year-old. Like I say, I have to go home to him this evening. What can I do? Get outside and kick a ball? Is it?
Well, exactly, and you know, especially in childhood, the best thing. It's very hard for, and there's really good studies on this, and I would always explain it, that it's very hard for a human being not to think about something. It's much easier for them to think about something else. And I do think one of the problems we have, you know, especially in that we've moved from a society when I was a kid where a lot of people lived in more rural communities to now more urban communities, I think there should be a massive pressure now on government and councils on providing, you know, playing pitches, on providing public spaces. And, you know, and certainly I think there needs to be a new invigoration in things like the Scout movement or movements like that get young people, you know, into safe areas, obviously, but into group activities. And whether that's, you know, in my day, some people went off to play football and some people went off to play Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, it's just, you know, something else, but it's not a screen. Yeah,
yeah. Or they went off and played a musical instrument, or they set up a band, or they did that. And, you know, everybody has different interests. But what we should be doing is creating an atmosphere for young children where actually, you know, so most of their leisure time is spent in communal activities. That's, you know, and it's easy to look back in the past with rose tinted glasses, but like certainly when I grew up, that was, you know, much more common.
Yeah. And the funny old thing as well is we're all chasing apps for those things, for like Dungeons and Dragons. We're chasing an app for learning how to play the keyboard. We're learning an app for this. And then, of course, the app is just one click away from another social media platform. Listen, it's lovely to talk to you. It's fascinating. And I suppose hopeful as well. If we can follow some of these proposals, it could be good for kids. And certainly as the discussion goes on, I think even younger kids are becoming more aware, much like the smoking discussion came up years ago. And then the younger generation are actually getting more plugged into the dangers of it than the last couple of generations have been. Consultant Professor Matthew Sadlier from the Irish Medical Organisation and the Mater Hospital, thanks so much for taking the call.
That's great. Bye-bye.
Cheers, sir. All the best. Bye-bye. And that is a podcast. We just did one. JP, we just did a podcast.
Yep.
JP, congratulations, everybody. I think we just did a podcast here. JP at todayfm.com. So be sure to subscribe and turn us on the radio on Today FM 100 to 102 on the FM dial. Have a lovely weekend. We'll talk Monday.
Uh-oh. Ray Foley.
Oh, here we go. Here come the details.
Weekday afternoons from 2 on Today FM.
Ray.
Yeah.
I love the show.
Hey!